All right. Welcome to another episode of Tarpon World Radio. I'm your host, Captain Barry Baruti, and today I'm joined with Robert Lukowitz, the manager here at Fish and Frank's. Let's say hello, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Doing well.
Sorry, I'm on Little World, I guess. The music just threw me for a loop. I was enjoying it.
That was Cake. That's actually the name of the band, and that's Short Skirt, Long Jacket, in case you want to listen to that afterwards, Robert.
Okay.
My eclectic taste in music.
There's nothing wrong with that.
So, today, something that was on my mind, and I brought it to your attention, I just want to talk about bait.
Okay.
Live bait especially, and what to expect, what time of years, what are the actual names of some of these things. I feel like people mix them up all the time.
All the time.
How to treat them, which ones are, you know, better served, are very hardy, which ones can die easily, which ones are more fragile. So
sure.
That's it. So let's master talking about baits.
Okay. Well, I mean, the one cool part about Southwest Florida is, you know, throughout the year you have your cycles of fish, but you also have your cycles of food sources.
Exactly.
And during the summertime, our primary food source that comes in from out in the Gulf is several species of bait fish, and they come in pretty large schools that we're fortunate enough to be able to go out and cast net or even catch on a sabiki, which is like a multiple bunch of little flies on one single line, and catch them that way to put in your live well and fish with them throughout the day. But some of these species do extremely well in an enclosed live well system. Some of them do not, and then almost all of them don't do well at all in a bait bucket situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so it takes a little bit of time and a little bit of education to figure out which ones are which ones do better, you know, and also that during the cycle of the spring going in through the summer when these bait fish show up, the fish feed on them differently, you know, so that all can play a little bit of a factor into it. But I think the two primary bait fish that we have here that show up in great numbers are, the true name is scaled sardines, but it's a fish with five or six different, like, local names. You've got greenbacks, greenies, white bait is probably one of the most common ones, pilchards, and scaled sardines is the real name of it. But then also some of the real old school crackers around here, we'll call them shiners.
Shiners, exactly. So what's that, about five, six different names for the scaled sardine?
Exactly. And that's probably the most hardiest of the soft bodied bait fish that we have here that we utilize a lot fishing both inshore and offshore. You know, and they range in, you know, an ideal size for us is what? 3 to 4 inches if you're really, really lucky.
Yeah, four inches and bigger is like if you're really lucky, like you said. But I think the average size would fits in a 3/8 inch mesh cast net.
Yeah, we catch them.
Those 3 inches.
Yeah, and they're also one of the bait fish that comes the chum. You can use this, you know, there's a lot of commercial grade chums out there that are just like a powder that you mix with water and put it in, scatter into the water, and it draws them into you. And then we cast net them, and you have to have a live well with constant new water source coming in and going out because they just do not do well in any type of enclosed habitat. You can't turn your live well off. You can't just run a battery-powered aerator in a bucket. You can't put them in just a bucket. You know, they're dead in a matter of minutes.
Right, what people typically do for shrimp, which is what you're describing, a bucket with an aerator, that really won't serve greenbacks or any type of live bait fish too well because they need constant fresh water along with aeration.
Exactly. The only bait fish that can be kept in a bait bucket around here that I'm aware of that can be caught regularly as pinfish, which we'll talk about those here hopefully in a little bit. But the white baits, by far the, you know, the scaled sardines are number one sought after bait fish just because they're fairly abundant most of the time. The fish really focus in on feeding on those for multiple reasons. Some people are, well, captains. I'm going to pick on captains just because it's fun to pick on captains. They're too cheap to go buy shrimp and other stuff when there's certain times where there's that crossover from spring, winter going into springtime where the whitebait does show up, but shrimp are still working better.
Because of water, the fish are still lethargic and don't want to chase around lively bait fish.
It's still water temperature related, but people will still say, well, the bait fish are here, so I'm going out and cast net and bait because they don't want to buy the shrimp. And there's times where white bait definitely works better than shrimp. It's not because I work at a bait shop and sell shrimp. That has nothing to do with the job security for me. Mm-hmm. I want people to be successful at fishing because they'll come back here.
Yeah.
You know, so there's times where certain baits, like you were saying, they're seasonal. Certain bait works better than others. You know, and then I think the biggest problem that I have personally with the bait fish of catching white bait is two things. One, people take way too many because they want to go out in what we call chum. You know, they're actually taking a handful of bait fish.
Sometimes not even a handful. I mean, it's like, you know those baseball bats that people chum with?
Yeah, the wiffle ball baseball bat.
Yeah, I've seen it. They'll put like 50 or like fill the whole bat up. Like half, like a quarter of your live well and throw it in one shot and you're like, oh my gosh. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Excessive chumming, that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's excessive chumming. But what they'll do is they'll do that to go into an area and they'll scatter it. They'll broadcast those bait fish all over the place and they're disoriented and everything else, so they become an easy prey item. Mm-hmm. So the snook and redfish and trout will come up and start popping on them and eating them, which is fine to an extent, but these guys will sometimes actually crush them or shake them really hard in that container that they're throwing them out in, and most of those bait fish die. They don't stand a chance because they've been damaged in some way.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that it doesn't really make you a better fisherman when you're going out and doing that stuff. It's all instant gratification. Mm. You know, they go out there and they throw all these white bait everywhere. Nothing pops and they go, oh, well, there's no fish here. And then they drive over to the next spot and throw out a handful. Right. Oh, there's a couple fish. And then they get excited and catch one or two or a dozen, whatever it happens to be. Mm. And then they move on to the next spot. They don't stop and realize, why didn't the fish bite there? Were there fish there? Was there a guy 20 minutes there before you that just threw out 50 or 100 bait fish and fed them? You know, what are the reasons why? So people forget to do that. But the other thing is that it works for good numbers, but it doesn't always work for quality fish, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you caught 50 snook today. You killed 1,000 bait fish to catch those 50 snook, but not a single one of those snook were over 24 inches.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so does it make you a good fisherman? Does it make you knowledgeable about the scenario of what was going on with those fish feeding that particular moment? Not always. So that's why, and not saying this because I don't use bait fish. I use them. There's no doubt about it. Uh-huh. But people stop thinking and trying to become better fishermen when they're using nothing but bait fish.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I know what you're saying, and that's but what would you say is, like you were touching on it, how many bait fish would you say a normal person can fit in a live well? Like an average live well, how much? When people like to say black out the well, like that's usually like
1,000 bait fish in one little live well.
Yeah.
That's realistic. I mean, I would say easily between 600 and 1,000 bait fish to a live well is what they'll put into it when they say they blacked it out. But realistically, if you want to fish and be a good angler and chum minimally, just to kind of learn the habits or the areas where those fish are kind of sitting, couple hundred bait fish a day or for an outing is really all you need.
Yeah. So let's say there's 20 boats in the entire harbor using those white baits, and each of them blacked out a well.
Let's just do a low number and say 500.
500. Okay. So you want to do 20 still? 20 sure. Boats.
And that's still a way low number.
Yeah, because that's...
Because we're talking about recreational and captains combined. It's not, we're not just going to pick on captains, because recreational anglers, there's a lot of recreational anglers out there that are far more proficient fishermen and bait catchers than some of the captains out there. So we'll just pick on a broad spectrum of
everybody anglers. Who are anglers in general on the water. Let's say there's only 20 a day, just 20 filling up 500 baits a day, which is like very underestimated, I feel.
And that's what? 10,000 bait?
10,000 bait fish.
10,000 bait fish a day.
Yeah.
and 20 boats in Charlotte Harbor, that's a really bad weather day like what we got going on right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can hear the thunder rumbling in the background, but yeah, so that's just interesting to put in perspective like that. 10,000 bait a day, you know, could be getting...
Are getting killed.
Killed, yeah.
Literally slaughtered.
But have you noticed any sort of decline in any of the bait fish? Do you think, like, what...
Absolutely.
Have you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you know this because you're born and raised here. You were raised right here on Charlotte Harbor. I know there's a... Jeez. A fairly good-sized gap in age between you and I, but you go back 20 years ago, because you're what?
31.
Okay, so you're 31. So at about 10 to 12 years old, you were starting to really pay attention to things going on around you, because you're much more observant than a lot of people of any age. So take back 20 years ago and take... You've always lived in that same house, overlooking... The beautiful, I mean, you've got one of the most spectacular views ever of Charlotte Harbor. 20 years ago, you could go stand in your backyard in June and look out to the center of the harbor. Yeah. At any given time, you could see a 1 acre school of bait here, a 5 acre school of bait 100 yards away, a 2 acre school of bait 200 yards away. As far as you could see patches of bait fish all the way across the other side of the harbor, or pretty much as far as you could see, correct?
Yeah, 100%. And I remember, like, in my teenage years, like, so about 15 years ago, but these weren't the green bags. These were the second bait fish, I think, we want to talk about, which are thread fins.
Well, no, about 20 years ago, it was actually both.
Were they both?
Okay. Yeah, 20 years ago, they were actually segregated. Because late June is when those other bait fish show up. Mm-hmm. But in May, June, you have the scaled sardines in good numbers. But what it would be is one of those schools of bait fish would be scaled sardines, white bait. The other school would be thread fins, which is the other bait fish we'll touch on.
Uh-huh.
And then another school would be thread fins, and another school would be white bait. But they'd be acre-sized to 2-acre-sized schools of bait fish that were completely segregated.
I do remember that, especially, like you said, May and June, in June especially, and there would be acres of these baits that would even go into the canal,
mm-hmm.
and there'd be so many of them, and they were just, like, the water would be teeming, and, like, you could see Spanish mackerel and little sharks racing through them, but that does happen now, but I don't really see it as, like, in the same places I did growing up. It would be more towards the southern, like, in the holes of the harbor, which probably was going on 10 times greater maybe back then. I don't know.
And it was, but nowadays it's mostly exclusively thread fins. It's no longer scaled sardines in one group and thread fins in another. Almost all those schools you see on the surface now are thread fin herring, which has three names: thread fins, threadies, uh-huh. and thread fin herring. Thread fin herring is its true name.
Yes.
Those are pretty much the only bait fish you see schooling up on the surface for the most part anymore. And if you do sometimes, and the smaller size bait fish, because a scaled sardine, a really big one, let's face it, is 4 inches. That's a pretty chunky one. They get bigger than that.
Yeah.
But in the harbor, 4 inches would be a pretty good one.
That's a very good size one, yes.
Versus our thread fins, they actually get 6 inches, 7 inches long, which we use for tarpon. We'll call them sometimes tarpon threadies.
Yes.
Because they're the size of your hand.
Yeah, you can't even, like, put your hand around them. Some of them are so, you know, wide. But yes. Right.
So nowadays you'll get sometimes where the smaller thread fins and white bait scaled sardines intermingle together because there's not enough of them to create their own school for safety, so they actually intermingle. It used to be segregated. Now they've kind of combined because that's how few of those bait fish there are anymore, the way it used to be.
Actually, now that you say that, I remember last month I did throw the net on a school of thread fin, the smaller ones in the 3 to 4 inch range. And we did catch a mix of both threadfin and whitebait in that school, even though we didn't know there were whitebait there.
Right.
So that's a very valid point.
And then the big difference is like threadfins, you know, even if they're smaller, threadfins don't stay alive and alive well nearly as easily as whitebait or scaled sardines do.
No, not at all. And that brings up, I think, a very, like, interesting topic, because you can easily, after 3 hours sometimes, just 3 hours of, let's say, 100, 200 baits being in your live well, you mm-hmm. can do everything right, pure good oxygen, good water flow, and then you open the live well, the hatch, after one trip to another side of the harbor, and they're all done. They're all dead.
Yeah.
Upside down, belly up.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to kill thread fins. They're very weak, and, like, personally, I don't like to use them for bait if I can help it.
Right. I'm the same way, yeah.
The only time I like thread fins is when I'm tarpon fishing, and I don't like to catch those particular guys in a cast net if I can help it. I would prefer to catch them on a sabiki rig. Mm-hmm. The sabiki rig, one, you know, those big thread fins, because they don't stay alive well in a live well, you only need maybe a couple dozen, three dozen tops in your live well, because after that they start dying too.
Exactly.
But catching them on a sabiki, they're much healthier, much friskier, have all of their scales on them, they're not all beat up, versus catching them in a cast net, even though you only want three dozen, you might catch 100, and you just beat up, you know, 50 bait fish that you let go.
Yes.
That probably aren't going to stand a chance to survive, just to keep those two or three dozen to put in your live well.
Right. And for everyone out there who hasn't really dealt with a thread fin herring, especially on the smaller ones, their scales come off very easily. And that's what leads to, I feel like, them just getting beat up so quickly and dying. And when you catch,
I think they choke on some of it too. I think those little scales floating around in that water can sometimes get into their gills, personally. I mean, it's, that's more of a Robertism or Frankism rather than a
factual thing,
but
it's a really good observation, because if you throw the net and catch, let's say, 300 of them and put them in the live well of the smaller ones, when you look in the water, it doesn't matter how gently you put them in and how immediately you did it, as good as you can do it, you'll look in the water and then you'll see it looks like glitter along with the thread fin swimming around, and that's all the scales that have already come off. And that, those, like you said, those scales can float around, and I'm sure, like you said, they could choke on them, get in their mouth, and that could lead to them dying quickly.
Yeah. A little trick that I do with even white bait, uh-huh, is I've almost always got like a 3-gallon bucket on the boat. Mm-hmm. As soon as that first batch gets thrown in the live well, I actually scoop out of the side of the boat a 3-gallon bucket and pour it real heavy into the live well, and I'll do that 2 or 3 times with those bait fish to help flush it faster, even though the live well will overflow a little bit. Mm-hmm. I do that for 2 reasons. One, it gets rid of the scales, uh-huh, very quickly, but also they're going to do the same thing that I would do. If somebody threw a net over us in a crowd and was pulling us up to some alien spaceship, the first thing I'm going to probably do is urinate and defecate and scream like a little girl. Yeah. So you're putting all those fish into a live well that's having it's pumping pretty good, but you still got that high ammonia from the urine and their defecation in there. So I think that helping flush that out helps
prolong
your bait a little bit more.
Yeah, that's interesting.
One of those useless little tricks.
Yeah, and that's and I can see that working just as well. So, I see your point with the bigger thread fins. They do seem to be a bit hardier in terms of their scales don't come off as easily as the smaller ones do.
Right.
And like you said, if you can catch them on sabikis, that is the primary method. That way, you can also have like this de-hooker,
yeah,
where you don't even have to touch the thread fin whatsoever.
No. Nope.
You have them all on that sabiki. You de-hook them and put it right over the live well, so they go from the hook directly into the live well without even being touched.
Yeah.
That's like the most optimal way of keeping them alive.
And if you ever want to do like a simple observation of that, go out there and catch some with the cast net and catch some with the sabiki. Keep them into 2 separate live wells. See which one gets hit more often by the tarpon. You'll find that a lot of times the ones that are sabikied get hit faster by a tarpon than the ones that were cast netted.
Right. They're stronger and giving off a better vibration. Probably what it is.
Something about it.
And one other little hack too for bait in general, especially thread fins, that I've kind of found is, and certain boats, their recirculation pump, like, blows water directly on top of the live well, like directly on top of the water.
Yeah.
And that can, especially with thread fins, it, like, I feel like it damages them.
It absolutely beats the scales off them, so I like to turn the nozzle.
There you go. Turn the nozzle, like, have it spray and hit the wall of the live well, or even up to the roof if you want, depending on where its location is. And that way they're getting fresh water, but it's not defeating the purpose and literally spraying the scales off of your bait and prolongs it that way. So
I even like to turn it so it's actually creating like a toilet bowl effect, so the live well is constantly circulating in a
circular
round pattern.
Yeah.
And it seems to keep them alive better, keeps them swimming, and it'll sometimes keep your bait fish from going into a corner and just staying there, because a lot of bait fish will stick their nose right in a corner and just swim themselves to death without moving. So having that water in a circular motion, even if it's a rectangular live well, which most of them are, which is silly to me. You'll find that those bait fish swim around a lot healthier or stay more healthy throughout the whole fishing time.
Yeah. So we've talked about the scaled sardines, the thread fins, and all their little nicknames, and you know, they're basically the half-life of them. And the third, I think, most common bait fish, and we have a few minutes left to discuss it, is I feel like the most hardy bait fish we have, and that is the pinfish.
Right. And a pinfish is a completely different animal in general, because the two, you know, the thread fins and the whitebait scaled sardines, those are a very soft-bodied fish. They are like a sardine, like what you would buy in a can of sardines, you know, that people used to eat and still do for that matter.
Yeah.
Just a very soft bone, soft meat, mushy, oily fish. And then you go to the pinfish, which is on the opposite end of it. It's a firm, hard-scaled, denser-boned fish.
With prickly fins, because the scaled sardines and the thread fins are soft. They don't have anything to poke you with. Yeah.
The only way I compare like a pinfish to when people come in to visit that are wanting to fish with bait fish is I tell them that a pinfish is great, and basically what it amounts to, it's a bluegill. The easiest way to describe it is that it's almost exactly like a bluegill, because the bluegills have the hard rays on their dorsal fins that'll poke you and stab you, but they're very, very extremely hardy.
Yeah.
It lives in a bait bucket with an aerator. It lives in a live well with minimal airflow through it. But the other thing that makes pinfish kind of one of those great baits also is that bait shops all over the state can carry them.
I was just going to say another difference is you can carry pinfish in the bait store, whereas thread fins and greenbacks, it's nearly impossible to keep them alive in a bait store, correct?
Right. And also bait fish and, you know, like the scaled sardines and thread fins are more seasonal. They're more of a summertime bait fish that's readily available, versus pinfish, for the most part, are available year-round.
Right.
They're not always the best thing to use year-round, but they are at least available year-round. You know, so that I think it's probably the most universal of all the bait fish there is in Southwest Florida anyway.
Yeah, because there's a plethora of them, it seems like at all times, and they're here year-round.
And they catch everything. I mean, they're kind of like the shrimp of the bait fish family. You know, you can go into a back canal and catch a snook on it, or a mangrove snapper. You can cut it up and catch even black drum on it.
You can take it offshore,
and you can catch grouper, amberjack, and larger snappers. I've caught shark, cobia, tarpon. I mean, everything eats a pinfish at some point or another. And because they come in so many different sizes, you can get them from using a little tiny, tiny hair hook and catch one that's the size of a quarter, all the way up to one that's the size of your hand, and you'll catch a fish on it at some point.
Yeah, definitely. That's very interesting bait fish. Yeah.
So it's pretty good, you know, and like I said, it's available year-round, so it's not something you have to struggle with. Yeah. And it can be caught on hook and line, cast net, you know, it's same concept.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
I think you can eat them too. I've seen some people eat the bigger ones.
They actually are edible. You know, they're just, you know, they pretty much kind of are a bluegill.
Yeah.
You know, makes them pretty interesting for a bait fish, you know. Yeah. So, I guess we're going to call that on all the bait fish.
I think that's it. We're just out of time. So, I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion about bait fish. And hit me up on tarpronworld@gmail.com for any questions or topics you'd like us to cover in the future. And check out my website, tarpronworld.com. And stay tuned for the next episode, and we'll see you next week.